Hello and welcome to the Comedy Club Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Kaufman. Please subscribe right there. Just click subscribe, share. Welcome. We're going to get right to it. I have one of the funniest people on the planet with me today, Mr. Jeremiah Watkins. Buddy, hello.
Hello. Hello, my friend. Greetings. Good to be here. Thanks for having me. My home club, the Comedy Club of Kansas City.
You are just, some people are just funny. You know, some people work like and write all that. You are just a funny person, man. You bring such a unique energy to the stage and to this industry. And you're always just so, more than just refreshing. It's just like an appreciation of the art of comedy is like at its peak when you're on stage.
Hey, if I can hear that from a fellow comic and also a comedy club owner, that's high praise, so thank you.
Well, I know when I first got to LA, you were definitely younger, like, so I, gosh, I've known you 13 years. I
mean, yeah, long time.
A long time now.
Long time.
It makes us seem older.
Right, right.
We are. We're both 29. We are a couple of 29-year-old guys over here. But I mean, you were very experimental then, very animated and just everything. So to see the growth of what you're doing today is it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you've been along for the ride, brother. And also, I mean, even just the amount of years you've had me here at the club. You've even seen, you know, just the evolution of sets and skill levels and different stuff like that. So, yeah, it's cool to see.
It's fun seeing you talk about your kids and your life and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just to bring, which is like a realism, I guess, that it was in your act. Not that it's always been there, but you used to do very like, you know, experimental and fun, like a farce, you know, almost like just, and to see like where it is now. I mean, that's just, you've allowed yourself to evolve on stage as well. So, I mean,
well, what's nice about when I do play like the Midwest and the South is if I'm being too weird, I can pop into family material and people are like, all right, he's one of us.
Do you feel like you get too weird sometimes?
I never feel that way. The audience sometimes feels that way.
And you can
being weird is my happy place.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing to do, is like get completely bizarre and strange on stage. But while I'm where I'm at career wise, until I develop an audience who's coming just for that, there's always going to be people who like, they're trying out a comedy show for seeing it. They've maybe never seen a comedy show. They're coming out for the first time. So you kind of have to cater it to like, I got to chill out sometimes. And like, sometimes I'll feel that more so specifically in the Midwest and the South than other like
because
coastal
they're not
shows.
Used to it.
Yeah. Just because like, on a level, like they can't even relate to it. They don't even have a friend they've even seen that's weird. So they start looking at you like an alien life form. And they're like, I can't relate to this guy at all. Where like on the coast, it's more like the arts and theater and stuff like that, where people are kind of used to seeing performance art. But when you're playing different markets, like across the US and in different countries or wherever, there's going to be people who are like, this is too much for me. I can't handle it. And that's when I gotta, what's nice to have family material and be like, okay, well, this guy has sons, he has a wife, he can't be that crazy.
So do you find yourself leaning into the family material more, not as a crutch but as a step back? Is like,
I wouldn't say it's a step back. It honestly, what you're talking about evolving, it's more of it's a great grounding factor. You don't want to, I mean, there's just got to be levels to anybody's set. If somebody is very high energy, it's going to be interesting during part of their set if they do bring it down. There's just like a roller coaster, got to have levels and different momentum and stuff like that. So it's brought a different element to my set that I would have probably not discovered, because I don't typically like to talk about personal stuff. Like originally, that's not what I was drawn to, a stand-up, but like over the years, like it's become more gratifying and being like, okay, cool, like people, that's what sometimes, that's the thing that people come up to me after the show about, because they're like, my toddler does this or my wife does this. And that's a fun, I know, element to bring to the table now.
You're from Kansas City, but you started performing in LA, correct?
Yep. I was doing improv here in high school and college, just like some classes in high school and college. And I took an improv class at Johnson County Community College, people.
Hey, I think we've all gone to Johnson County Community
College. I have my associate's degree from there, baby. And it does nothing for you in the real world. But I got a good life experience there. That's more what I was, what I clocked it as. I was like, this is just me trying to grow up a little bit.
So what was your intro to performing when at first in LA? Like, what was your, where did you start? How did you start? Like, was it just open mic?
Second City, Los Angeles. Became an intern there as fast as I could. Started consuming, trying to become a student of comedy. I used to check out their, they had a DVD booklet of archives of old Second City main stage shows that I would watch with Chris Farley and Steve Carell and Tina Fey and Eugene Levy and all these, like all these, like just juggernauts from performing there. From performing, like, that's either amazing. On the main stage in Chicago or in Toronto, they had all these archive DVDs of live performances, and you're like, whoa, you're getting to see them kill, not in front of a studio audience, just like what it would be at a comedy club. And
you took advantage of that.
I totally did. I watched as much as I could. And it was very inspiring to see people, you know, Chris Farley do his Matt Foley character before SNL.
Before SNL. Wow.
Yeah.
So that started at Second City.
Mm-hmm. And Holly Wartell, one of my favorite teachers at Second City, she was in that cast with Farley doing...
How many people don't know that, like, that character was created? I mean, like, you associate Foley as one of the greatest SNL characters of all time, sure. Right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's to hear that, like, that was actually something he did even beforehand and brought to SNL.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't know that. I'm a big Chris Farley fan. I didn't know that he had already been doing that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so stuff like that, I mean, I'm always just, you know, I got some great advice at Second City from one of the teachers there. I forget who said it. It was one of, like, the people instructing one of the classes at one point at Second City. But he said, don't be afraid to be a nerd with comedy. And I loved that because nerd has a stigma to it, you know, from the time we're little. Oh, you're a nerd.
Yeah.
You know, it has like a negative connotation, but he's like, be a nerd with comedy. Consume everything you can. Surround yourself. Immerse yourself in it. And that's how you're going to learn and get better. And I love that. And I was like, yeah.
I know a lot of people, when they get to that point, as far as just completely surrounding, even for myself and other friends, like, there was a time I wouldn't even go to concerts. I wasn't going to wrestling shows. I wasn't doing, if it wasn't comedy, I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was for so long. Like, you know, and so I absolutely understand what you're saying in that. And I think it's important to keep a balance, but early on, it's definitely worth just being a nerd.
Oh, yeah. Being in the deep end, baby. Got to do it.
So Second City, what were some of the, I mean, outside of the Foley, any other like really cool tapes stand out from those?
One of my favorite things was seeing Stephen Colbert and Steve Carell in the same cast at Second City. I mean, I didn't know back in the, they were in the same performing cast on the main stage there.
Wow.
And that just goes to show you how good you have to be if that's other people who made it in that cast of that show that was on the main stage there. And it's the same thing with stand-up, where there's only so many working headliners per year. There's literally not enough spots for thousands of headliners to be doing it. It becomes a smaller and smaller pool, as you know, over the years of doing this. And you have to be really freaking good. And it's the same thing. Like when I was going through Second City, I was like, whoa, this person was in this cast and that person were like, they came up together. I had no idea. And it was, that's always cool to see.
So from Second City, where did you venture into stand up? I know you were working the store very young. Was that one of the earlier places you were performing, or as far as stand up?
I went to the store in 2011 after I'd been doing stand up for a little bit, and I had a very mid set, and I left for a year.
Was that your first time, or you'd been doing?
My first time doing the potluck there, the open mic, and okay. I left for a year because it scared me that people were going to remember that set and associate that with me. So I literally, I left. I didn't go back to the store for a year. I was like, I'm going to get really good before I start going there like consistently. And then in 2012, summer 2012, that's when I started going like every day.
So you didn't stop performing. You stopped performing there.
Just there.
Just there. Because you were like, when I get there, I want to be ready.
Guns a-blazing, coming in with also the material too. I'm like, I want to come in with a different 3-minute set like every week if I can. And that's what I became known as when I did start to get in there, is this guy has a different set every single week. And sometimes it was a minute of material, 2 minutes of riffing and crowd work or whatever. Sometimes it was a full set of material, but it was different every time, enough where the talent coordinator was watching and like, okay, this guy's putting in work and to a successful enough amount where his peers are putting him up on this mic.
And you were getting on stage enough between that 3 minutes a week where you're like, I'm writing a new 3 minutes every week and I'm taking it to the store.
Yeah, it might not have been a full 3 minutes, like I said, but it was like little bits and pieces where I had enough material that I'd written in my time doing stand-up where, and I felt comfortable enough where I'm like, I think I can like tell this funny thing and then like riff and just see what the energy's like and just try to build on that. Because my goal was with the open mic, as you know, sometimes open mics are brutal to watch. And if you can leave the stage in a better place with better energy after you leave, the host and the audience is grateful for you. You may not have the best jokes, but you at least you improve the show as a whole and you set up the next comic for success. And the host is always thankful for that. And the audience is like, oh, finally a break of somebody who's not horrible. It was just, you know, not getting anywhere with us and not connecting.
What are your comedy goals right now, man? Like, do you have, like, for performance-wise? I mean, do you have things that you still want to, like, aspire to do creatively? Or is it really just kind of minute to minute? Or
no, I've got some big goals. Yeah.
I don't mean business-wise. I mean yeah. Performance-wise, artistically. I'm not...
Artistically?
I think professionally, dude... You're doing I think more artistically is.
Artistically, I mean, this kind of goes with business and stuff like that. But artistically, my next hour, I'm very excited about recording and putting out. Like I've been running it for a bit, and obviously you have seen very different sets of mine over the weekend. So you're like, well, that's not the hour that. But there's fragments of it that are like I have ran at some different clubs and stuff like that. That. I'm very excited to record that and put that out. So that's the most immediate goal is this. It'll be my third special.
Do you have a date?
I need to figure it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, you've had a knack to really this weekend, find the loudest, drunkest women that we've already told to shut up to start talking again. The one on the first show tonight, it was fine, but then she didn't stop. She starts walking across the room talking and I'm like, you have to stop. And she's just, and she, it was great. It was fine. Right. But it was so funny. She's like, he was talking to me. I'm like, no, he was talking to you. Now you're just talking in the back of the showroom while he's telling jokes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and they went out and smoked on the patio for the majority, which was,
yeah. Did they come back?
Maybe for like a minute. I know they went back into the bar.
Yeah. The show got better without them.
Yes.
I sometimes do that, Dustin.
Weed them out. Mm-hmm. That trust falls.
I did a trust fall with an audience member last night on stage. Was she one of the most loudest and obnoxious people in the room? She might have been.
So here's what
could she have possibly dropped me? Could I have died last night on stage? Could Dustin have had blood on his hands at the Comedy Club of Kansas City? It's quite possible. But guess what? She caught me, and it was a fairy tale ending.
You know, I'll say this about her. Like, we had asked that table to stop talking
she
already.
She described herself as thick-backed, just to let you know. That's what she described herself as. Continue.
We had asked her to stop, and then, like, you immediately... Right, and you could tell, like, it's just loud, it's drunk, I'm not sure, this, like, it's a lot of energy, a lot of volume, right? But what I did notice is that you brought her up, she did her thing, you guys did your fall, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this person who was just unruly after that whole thing, dude, I didn't hear her again for the rest of the show.
Exactly.
It was, like, it was amazing to watch.
Because some people... And it's not warranted. I don't do this at every show. But I, obviously, from doing this at a lot of different places everywhere, I have a pretty good gauge of people's energy and tone and body language and all that stuff and the psychology behind all this stuff. And some people, it's way better to just give them 20 seconds of the show, undivided attention, and then they freaking shut up the rest of the time.
Really?
In my opinion, some comics would probably say that's terrible and they would never do that. They'd never like allow audience like to just give them the room, let them have their undivided attention. I don't really care. If it improves the room and then they're fine and well behaved the rest of the show.
You can get a laugh while improving the room.
Yeah, I'm all about energy and transforming it to how I want to manipulate it. So I like being the puppet master of energy in the room. And I saw that and I was like, I have been in this predicament before. If I just knock this out real quick, the rest of the show is going to be cake. But right now she's chirping enough where it's annoying to other people around and annoying to me on stage. Let's just clear this. And then the rest of the show, I mean, she was very well behaved.
They didn't say another word. And
They've been warned or whatever.
They've been talked to. I mean, they were there, you know. You never even once had to be like, you had your time. They just shut up.
They got it. They got it after that. Yeah.
It's amazing. Well, it's dangerous to think. I mean, giving a little attention, calling, I understand that 100%. I mean, as far as putting them on stage and stuff.
No, that's extra. That's extra.
If you want to be a part of the show, you can. All you have to do is get, no. Like, don't. That's not.
I will say that last year was one of the most memorable headlining shows that I've had.
When the power went out? Mm-hmm. It was. I couldn't think of one other person I'd rather have in the moment. Because to the way you handled that, like the power, it wasn't like we didn't pay our bill. Like the power was out everywhere.
Blocks. A mile or two radius from the club.
The audience, you had the audience bring all the table candles.
All the battery powered table candles.
LED candles to the stage.
To the stage.
And then you did this like, one man show theater perform. It was so good. Like they ended with a standing ovation. You know what I mean? Like in the moat and we just kept them there.
Yeah. Like, I looked over at you at one point and I go, Dustin, how's it looking? Just for a mental clock for me. Because I was like, kind of thinking, I'm like,
what's going on?
Well, what's happening? And then how much longer are we doing this for? Because I was 5 minutes or so into my headlining set when the power went out. So then I start riffing for another 15, 20, and then I look over in the darkness and I hear Dustin's cackle in the darkness. And I'm like, bro, where are we at with the power situation? And you're like, it's not looking good. So I finished the hour. And in darkness, with no mic, no sound, all the elements, we just had the flicker of those candlelights on the front of the stage, and then I sold merch out front with the flashlight on my phone afterwards, and it was a very cool moment, even though it was difficult, but it was something I was like, I can literally do any show now.
Like it's,
I can do any, like people are always like, oh, I had this one bad time. I'm like, I lost all the elements of stand up and we still did the show. I lost all of the things in the, you know, your sword, your shield taken away.
Like that's, I mean, as you, I talk, you know, about hell, things that could go wrong, hell, like in bad experiences. I mean, is that the only time you've had, I mean, just the power, the entire.
I've had the power go out of different clubs, but it, not to that extent. It wasn't that bad.
Okay.
They got it back working. They got speakers back on. Like we had no speakers. We had no lights, anything.
We're not canceling the show, Jeremiah.
But that's what I told the crowd. I said, you guys paid the same amount as all the other five shows of the weekend, and it was my last show of the weekend on the Saturday night. And I was like, you guys paid the same. I'm going to give you the same show. Well, it's not going to be the same show, but it's going to be a show, and it's going to be tailored for you guys tonight, right here, right now. And the crowd was like, we're in. And nobody left.
I will say, as a spectator, it's one of the coolest moments in comedy. To see everybody come together and appreciate the moment. Like it's when everybody brought their candles to the stage. To see you like ha ha like with an LED candlelit stage and no other lights on, and
guys with no microphone, you must project and you must use your theater voice.
And it was just special.
It was a special night for sure.
You know, in hindsight, cool. Like that's a memory of this business that will always have a smile.
I think I have the audio of it, but my cameras went out. Well, no, my cameras didn't go out. I had battery on the cameras, but it was so dark.
It didn't pick anything up.
It was that dark in the room where I even putting the exposure and everything up all the way, still nothing. That's how dark it was in the room. You literally could only see with everything in post brought up all the way, just the gentle flicker of the candles. That's how dark it was, like, in that room.
Maybe just audio over an image or something?
No, I've never. No.
Oh, I would love to hear that.
Oh, yeah? Maybe I'll dig through the archives.
Hey, I would love to
hear a Spotify album of just that.
I just want to hear it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like,
I would love to relive that.
Like, well, it would be reliving it if it's just the audio because you couldn't see my face very well on stage.
Yeah. You know, it's a you know, a B side,
right.
A something.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about the consumers.
I would have to listen to it.
Oh, to see what it was.
To see like how does this hold up without. Like being in the room.
There?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. I think it's still magical.
Yeah.
The audience, you know what's going to define that is the noise of laughter.
Yeah.
The sound of laughter. And it was not shy that at all.
Yeah, no. That it went really well. That's what was part of it being so special is how fun it was.
History, listening back, right? But history can't erase mm-hmm. the laughs.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I would love to think about it.
Okay.
Even if you don't release it, I just, you know.
Yeah.
I want to see a clip of it, something.
Okay. All right.
What do you have coming up, dude?
I'm on tour. You can catch me on tour coming up depending on when this comes out, potentially New York, LA, Chicago.
It'll come out in a few weeks.
Batavia. I might have already been in New York by then. We'll see. Texas coming up, Portland, Indianapolis. I'm on the road all over. JeremiahWatkins.com. And then I've got three YouTube channels. I'm very accessible online if you like my stuff or are more curious about stuff. I got Trailer Tales, Stand Up on the Spot, and I release a bunch of stand-up content on my personal Jeremiah Watkins page on YouTube. So, and Jeremiah, stand up on socials, baby. I'm easy to find.
I love finding you. I love when you pop up in my feed. Like I really am. I you've done so much. Every time I see you show up somewhere or hear of you doing something, I'm always so happy to hear it. Right? I like seeing people I like do great things, you know? Thanks, so buddy. Like from the first appearances on the roast battle to, you know, Joker to, I mean, your clips for Stand Up on the Spot are phenomenal. You guys check out Stand Up on the Spot. I mean, just anything Jeremiah is doing, follow him. Come see him. If you haven't seen him, see him, and we'll see you next week. Subscribe. Bye.
Bye guys. Love ya.